So we'll start with something for Parshas Truma, and this actually I do have a photocopy. This is a drasha that my father gave, and what I find in this drasha that's pretty fascinating is that it takes you back to a different society, and I enjoy that. So we'll see if it goes. And then we'll say something for Parshas Mishpatim, which we read yesterday, and Parshas, another piece in Parshas Truma. There's a very interesting Mishnah in Masechta Truma, right? Our Parshas Truma, and there's an entire Masechta called Trumos. And the Mishnah talks about five categories of people who are posel, who are not accepted for Truma. And in this presentation, what we're going to see, al pi derech hadrush, is that we can take each one of those five categories and learn something from them about how not to give. Because truma really is meant to be the mitzvah of tzedakah, of contributing. And the word truma means to uplift. And there are five categories which the Mishnah isolates that are unfit for giving. And maybe that can teach us something about the mitzvah of tzedakah. There's an interesting sociological opening here, because today I don't know if everyone would agree with this position. Things have changed. This was 30 years ago when even non-Jews recognized that Jews were givers. They were very philanthropic. And I don't know what your feeling is, whether or not if you took a census amongst universal man and ask if Jews are admired for their charity, I'm not sure where that would go. What's your if you have any knee-jerk response?
That's my response to that would be, there are certain cultures where charity is a foreign concept. But are the
non-Jews in America, for example, because everyone here I think has had some exposure to America, are they admirers of the Jewish people as givers? You know, are the Jewish people at the top of the list of those who give charity? I don't know.
They're not recognized.
The stereotype is stingy.
Yeah.
So that's what I'm telling you here. This is very, very interesting, this comment. Jonathan, you want a copy of this?
Okay.
There should be one other copy floating around. In any event, he says the following, that generally speaking, we put the emphasis in tzedakah on the makabel. And that really is the goal of the mitzvah. We don't put that much emphasis on the nosen and the way he gives, the tzurat ha-netina. But yet, the halacha does recognize that the way a person gives money is very important. The attitude, for example, the Rambam has levels of tzedakah in Hilchos Matnas Aniyim, the highest level of which is a matan v'seisa, you know. But the Rambam emphasizes over and over again that when you give tzedakah, you have to give it with the right attitude. You have to give it with sefer panim yafot, never to make the recipient feel... I always say that amongst the various philanthropic Jews who give to causes, the best you can find is someone who's rich and wants to give, but doesn't make you feel, if you're coming to solicit funds, that you have to crawl on all fours. You know, he really sits down with you, he learns what your organization is about, would he want to contribute, but he does it with, you know, with a sefer panim yafot. And that's a madrega in tzedakah. So when tzedakah is given with compassion, in a dignified manner, I would add with friendship, that really is the proper way of performing the mitzvah. And we have to train our generations that they should give in this way, that an act of chesed should be exactly that, where the recipient doesn't feel embarrassed about it. I know, are you gentlemen familiar with Yad Eliezer at all? Does that mean anything to you? So anyway, Yad Eliezer gives out food packages to poor people.
My wife used to work.
Yeah, my wife and I are very active in that organization. And one of the things that they require is that when they have young people, usually the girls who come to seminary for a year, boys who come to yeshiva for a year, will volunteer, probably on different days, right, to give out the packages. And the law is like that. You bring the package has a bunch of staples, you leave it at the door, you ring the bell or bang on the door, and then you have to skedoodle, you know. When the people come out and receive it, they don't see who is given at all. You know, that's all to uplift the tzedakah act, you know, to pure chesed. Giving at the highest spiritual level out of love with a deep feeling of gratitude for Hashem for being put in that position to contribute with a sense of responsibility to give a person who's in need, that's called truma. And that's why our parasha is not called Nitina, but rather the parasha of Truma. And that's how Moshe Rabbeinu is given the tzibur by Hashem at the beginning of our parasha, to encourage the Jewish people to come forward with a Truma. Truma is Miloshen Harama, like Laharim, which is meant to uplift. So who are the five categories that we mentioned before that the Mishnah excludes from Truma? The first person is the Cheresh. Literally a deaf person. What does that mean on a moral level? You know, Shivim Panim LaTorah, as we say. He is the individual who's insensitive to the plight of others. He doesn't hear. He doesn't hear their cries. Interesting. He says, again, this is something, you know, has to be understood in a certain context. A lot of people who are wealthy and middle, you know, middle of the road people, have the accountant. The accountant works out tax deductible, and he'll tell you exactly how much you can give in order to get a deduction from taxes. So this individual is completely controlled by his accountant. How much is tax deductible? And he has a certain figure. That's how much he's going to give to tzedakah. No matter how dire the need is, no, how urgent, no pleas will move him. If he's finished for that year, for the tax year, you know, by the end of December, that's all. He doesn't respond to any pleas. He's a cheresh. Again, he's worthy because he does fulfill the mitzvah of tzedakah, but in a sense, not having the capacity to hear and go a little beyond what he's obligated to do makes his tzedakah lacking in truma. It doesn't have the ability to uplift him. The second category is a shota. Right? A shota is literally a fool. You know, the New York Times had an article, again, this is many, many years ago, about a woman who died. She was very wealthy. And she left, this, you know, this is quite humorous, but she left all her money to her cat. You know. And, you know, this...
What does that even mean? A cat?
I don't know exactly the legal implications of it, but it's great for those who are, you know, just there to protect animals. I guess maybe the city would have to see to it that money would protect our cat. But be that as it may, there's a certain kind of giving of a shota, of a fool. There's a lack of good sense of making the right mature decisions. For example, if you were to give out all your money to people who are on the streets rather than give money to major organizations that support the poor, that would in a sense be shtut. And even though we want to give money to people who are on the streets, they're homeless, but the question is, what are they going to do with that money? And he says very often you meet people who give money and they boast of the fact that they never give to the state of Israel, they never give to the cancer fund, they give out money to the people who are lying on the streets who need money to buy liquor and drugs, he says. That kind of indiscriminate, you know, you don't use your seichel in giving, that's called shtus. That's called a tzedakah that's not harama, that's not a truma. The third category listed in the Mishnah is a katan. This is a person who gives, but he's immature about his giving. Children are very known to look over their shoulders constantly for approval. They are very influenced by their social group. And so too you have an individual who gives money, but his concern, what motivates him, is applause. You know, he wants his picture splashed on the front cover of the paper. He says, such a person has an insatiable desire and hunger for public flattery. And it's a little bit detrimental to his character, because the Torah doesn't, you know, again, a person should be motivated lishma on the highest level, but even if it's not the highest level of lishma, at least it shouldn't be for the sake of aggrandizement. You know, he wants publicity, he wants approval. And if I could stop here for a moment and tell you a story, this is a true story. I was in a town in mid-America, and I had an appointment with someone to raise money for our yeshiva, and he showed me that he was the CEO of a company. He showed me on the computer screen where the money of this company goes, and then he explained to me what benefits he gets by supporting the local police department and the fire department and so forth and so on. He's considered a big shot. He has actually political clout in that particular city in America. He was pretty much disinterested in what I was trying to offer him. He says, it annoys me, again, you have to see this in a certain sociological context, the historical context. It annoys me to the point of nausea to see week after week photographs of individuals in the form of advertisements in Yiddish newspapers and the Anglo-Saxon press, in which they advertise what they're doing for or what they're giving to a particular organization. He says, true, Hashkocha Pratis has been very kind to them. Hashem has bestowed to them lots of gifts, lots of money. But what they're interested in is like a child looking over his shoulders is to get this applause. And Nebuchworthy charities have to cater to this person and his swollen egos. Ego. So I just heard recently about a story of a yeshiva ketana that wanted to open up its doors to children who want to study by a certain psychological method. What's it called? Mansuri? I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing
Montessori.
It right. Montessori. And there was another local school that was supported by a major contributor that wanted to block it because he was afraid that the parents would want to send to this Montessori school and not send to his yeshiva. And he went to some of the Gedolim and he got them to produce somehow a letter that said that they can't open up this school.
That's very shocking.
But it was even more shocking. The letter said that they can't open the school anywhere in the city.
Very shocking.
And we know that when it comes to education, the rule is that there's no asogas gvul. Adarava, you know, marva Torah and what we call kina sofer marva chachma. That's how you elevate the level of education. But again, this was a major donor. I mean, I don't want to mention any of the names or so, but you'll probably be reading about this thing in the newspaper. A rabbi was once asked why he cringes in the presence of a certain wealthy Amoritz. He replied that when one has to milk a cow, he has to bend down. Okay, it's a little bit embarrassing. The fourth category is Hatorim Esha Eino Shalom. He gives money that doesn't really belong to him. He has cheated others, exploited or defrauded them, and he gives that money. He says that sometimes you can ask waiters, you know, who wait at certain hotels, who are the big givers? And he says they tell you that the best tippers are crooks, racketeers, and women and men and women who work for the mafia. Their money is tainted or laundered. Easy come, easy go. And there's a book written in America by a woman named Ida Tarbell, and she tells of the early robber barons of American industry who cheated. They stole right and left from individuals, from the government itself, And many of them, she writes, were the founders of America's first families. Yeah, well, it's good that they give to libraries and hospitals and peace foundations, but at least they're not keeping all the loot for themselves. But you could hardly say that giving those money, that money is a truma, and it can be categorized as uplifting. And finally, the fifth category is Akum Shetarim Et Shel Yisrael. These are Jews who give to impress the non-Jews. They contribute thousands and hundreds of thousands to non-Jewish causes, but they refuse to give to the enterprise and the needs of their own people, of the Jewish people. Yeah, okay, it's fine to contribute to non-Jewish benevolences and institutions. However, there's got to be some balance in the way that one distributes his wealth. I just heard recently a fascinating story. I don't know if you've heard this. About a very big gvir, who's also a Talmud Chacham, who was in a hotel together with Michael Steinhardt. Do you guys know who Michael Steinhardt is? Have you ever heard of Taglit?
Yeah.
Birthright? Michael Steinhardt gives tons and tons of money to Birthright. He is Birthright, basically. And as you and I know, many, many young people have no Jewish background whatsoever come, and they get interested in Israel. Some even get interested in Yiddishkeit. And this is the one man who's... So anyway, this big gvir, who's from a Yid, I mean, he's a big Talmud Chacham, gives a lot of charity to Koilim and so forth and so on. He meets Michael Steinhardt. Apparently knew each other. And he says to him, Mike, I want to buy your chelik in Olam Haba. How much you want to charge me? So Michael, I don't know exactly what Michael answered, but this guy wrote out a check for $100,000 and gave it to Michael Steinhardt. The next morning at breakfast, Michael comes to him with the check. He says, it was a nice joke. Here's your check. This guy says, I meant it seriously. If you would have asked me for $1 million, I would have bought your Olam Haba for $1 million. So Michael says to him, but I don't believe in God. I don't believe in the world to come. What do you mean that I'm going to have a chelik in the world to come? And the man reiterated, take the check and keep it. I want to buy your chelik in Olam Haba. And the truth is that the poskim have dealt with such issues, whether you can actually buy a person's chelik in Olam Haba.
You mean sell it more than once?
Maybe you could sell your wife's portion, I don't know, but you'd have to get her to sign on, you know.
Or maybe like my chelik up until everything I've accrued until now, everything I accrue afterwards,
That's not included.
I have stock market for it.
There's a famous story about the Apta Rav, the Oiv Yisrael, if you heard of him. He had a chassid who was very poor and had to marry off his daughter. And he came to the Rebbe and he said, Rebbe, what should I do? I really need 1,000 rubles or I don't remember how much, 10,000 rubles. So the Rebbe said to him, how much money do you have? He says, I have 10 rubles. So the Rebbe sort of laughed inside of him. What can you do with 10 rubles? So the Rebbe said to him, give you my bracha. The first business investment opportunity that comes along, invest your money. So the man went out. He was very excited. The Rebbe gave him a bracha. He tried and tried the whole day. He's running around. No one wants to take a 10 ruble amount of money for an investment. And then he's totally broken, totally exhausted. How's he going to marry off his daughter? And he sees a saloon. And he hears that people are drunk and they're drinking and they're having a lot of fun. He goes in there and he asks the entrepreneur, can I somehow sit down just to collapse in a chair for a few minutes? I won't bother you. Anyway, as he's sitting in the chair, he overhears a conversation in which one of the chevra who is sitting around at this bar, you know, the Jews, he says to his friends, you know, what's going to happen when we get up to the next world? And Hashem's going to ask us, look what you did. Well, you spent your life just drinking. And so the biggest guy in the whole group is this big, loud Bulvian, says to him, forget about all of our bar. None of us are going to make it there anyway. And then he adds a sentence and he says, my Olam Haba is not even worth 10 rubles. So this chassid, all of a sudden he has 10 rubles. He gets out of his seat and he walks over to the guy. He says, listen, I'm willing to buy your Olam Haba for 10 rubles. So everybody starts cracking and he says, and they laugh. They say, it's a bad deal. You know? Anyway, the guy is absolutely serious. He turns to the guy and he says, here's 10 rubles. So the guy says, I'm willing to sell you my olam haba. He says, I want it signed on a document. And he writes up a document in which this guy, and everyone's laughing, sells his olam haba for 10 rubles. And he signs the document. And this guy is walking out of the saloon thinking, what did the Rebbe do to me? You know, this is my first possibility. But as he's walking out, he hears a woman screaming from upstairs. And she comes down and she says to her husband in front of the whole group, you sold your olam haba? I'm not married. I'm not going to be married to a person who sells it. Until you buy back the olam haba, don't come home. And this guy all of a sudden sobers up. He runs after the chassid. He says, sell it back to me. So he says, how much? I'll give you 20 rubles. He says, no. I need 1,000 rubles to marry off my daughter. That's exactly what he gave him. Now this Bolvyan, who sold his olam haba for 10 rubles, came to the Rebbe. That's what the story goes. And he said to the Apter Rebbe, did I do a good deal? You know, paying 1,000 rubles for my olam haba. So the Rebbe said to him, listen, if you would ask me this question before you sold it, I would have told you it's not even worth 1 ruble. But now that this chassid can marry off his daughter with the money you gave him, it's worth a lot more than 1,000 rubles.
But what a chassidish story.
Yeah, that's a chassidish maisa. But there's a lot of truth to it, because the concept of truma means lishma. Rashi says in the very beginning of that parsha that a person should give lishma. Lishma means for the sake of Hashem. And Rashi says the following. It says, Tikhu li truma in the pasuk. You know, the Torah would have said, li meaning to me. Rashi says, lishmi, for the sake of Hashem's name. There are some people who give lecha, meaning for you. They want to impress you. And others give because of lo, because of him. You know, they have different political advantages and honors. The correct way of giving is lishmi. Lishmi means for the sake of Hashem and for his Bnei Yisrael, and to alleviate suffering, to educate the youth, to promote human welfare and freedom, to spread the word of Hashem. That's the lishma that we have to strive for. That's a true one. That's something I wanted to share with you. Okay. Still have 5 minutes? Okay. Try to give something quick. For Parshas Mishpatim, I wanted to study with you a Rambam at the beginning of Hilchas Avodim and the Chofetz Chaim's embellishment. The Rambam writes that an Eved Ivri Omer B'Torah Ze Yisraeli Shemachro So Bezdin Al Korcho Ketzad Gonav Yeno L'Shalem, he stole and he doesn't have money to pay, is Bezdin Mochrin also. V'elicha ish mi Yisrael shemochrin oso bezdin ela haganav bilvat. So the Chofetz Chaim has a brilliant insight into this halacha that an eved is sold into avdus, a Jew is sold into avdus because of gneva. He can't pay the gneva, because in the very next pasuk the Torah says, im adonav yitein lo isha v'yoldu lo bonim o bonos, etc., etc. And Chazal say, "Ein akosu b'davrel b'machru bezdin v'nimkar b'gnei vaso." And when it says, "Adonav yitein lo isha," the isha here is a shifcha k'nainis, and v'yol lo bonim obonos means that the children of this marriage, so to speak, it's not really a marriage, but of this relationship between the eved and the shifcha, they accrue to the adon, to the master who purchased the eved. Says the Chofetz Chaim, Biragil, as a general rule, who chait chamor, for a Jew to have relations with a shivcha knais is a very serious violation. Kanoim pogim bo lahargo, he quotes the Gemara in Sanhedrin. That's the whole story with Pinchas. Va'isha v'yaldeha tiel adoneha, and he's allowed to have a relationship with this woman. Harambam, yeah.
Isn't a shivcha more lenient Then Aramis, like,
I don't know. I'd have to research that.
She's like a half a Jew.
The Chofetz Chaim,
like,
the Chofetz Chaim, right?
Because she's
mechuyav espemetzus.
Yeah, and Eved can marry her also. It's like Eved Kanani can marry.
That's what we're talking
about. Right. The Rambam, he quotes, says about this avera of having relations with the Kananis, Yeshlo hefse yoser gadol mikol arayos. Says the Rambam, why? Shaben min akusis eno bno. That the child is not a Jewish child. He's not related to his father, his biological father. And therefore, he's not going to be raised to be Shomer Tariag Mitzvahs because he's being raised by a Shifcha Kmanis.
He's also not really Jewish because the mother is after the mother.
Correct. So the Chofetz Chaim says the following. Listen to the Cheshvin, like, you know, you can miss this, but he says the following. He says, we're going to sell this Eved because of the Avera of Gezel for 6 years as an Eved. Leos begeder boel oramis, ligrom shezaro lo yichashev kibno, and why? Kidei lachaper al avon gneva. He says the following. Wait a minute. Okay, he's guilty of the avon of gneva, but because of that, for a kapara for the avon of gneva, he's going to become a boel oramis, and his children are not his children. This man could marry a Jewish girl and have Jewish children. And the Chofetz Chaim would get up in front of the yeshiva and he would say the following. If you di son nachriya, halo hakol yisracha kumimenu. Imagine if a Jew in the community, this is back in the time of the Chofetz Chaim, I don't know if it's necessarily true today, he would marry out of the faith, right? Yo kiuo so kiuo hotzi es asmi miklal yisrael. Yeah, he intermarried, you know, he's not part of our community. The ilu. But what about a person? Lava velo shilem b'moed. He borrowed money. Yesh lo mal l'shali, but he refuses to pay back the money. Yityachsu elav b'sachlanut. You know, people forgive him for the crime. Lo yimanu lachlok lo kovid la lo solitaira. Afal gav de momen acherim b'yodu shalo kedin. He's holding on to other people's money. And he's stealing it, basically. Nidmeh, it seems in the eyes of the people. Ein lashvot chumrat maseu. Of this guy, he's not paying some, he's paying back his loan. L'misha nasa nachris v'ilu haktora hakadosha, says the Chofetz Chaim. Moralano shanim kar b'gnei vaso. What was his avera? He stole money. V'rabo moser lo shivcha knainis ubonov avodim ubrishus adonov kol zot kidei lahachzir tashlim hagneva. In order that he should have a kapora for his gneva and pay back the Adon for this money he stole. Hare shalafi ashkofas haTorah mutav, it's better lachiyot sheishonim shifka knais laholim menu avodim ubilvad shal yishar biyodo momen chaver shalom kidin. It's a pella. I saw this Chofetz Chaim. I jumped out of my seat. You know, I have a choice of two things. Either he's holding on to someone else's money, he doesn't have the money to pay it, right, but he's going to marry a Jewish girl, or let him earn that money, even if it means that he's living with a shivcha.
Well, somebody that he has money to pay, then we don't sell him. We just force him to pay it. Right?
Correct. Again, because then he could be the Heishim Sagzela Shar Gozal, right? But if he's not able to fulfill the Heishim Sagzela Shar Gozal, he's going to be sold as an eved by Bezdin. And why? Because he's holding on to someone's mammon. And as long as you're holding on to someone's moment, you can't achieve kapara for gneva. He says, I'm going to finish up now. Sure. But it primarily applies to a man, that a man is not allowed to marry a Kadesha, correct?
No, but that, is that what we're talking about here?
Yeah. A Shivka is a din of a Kadesha. Every deal with a Shivka Knainis is a violation of a Lavdo Raisa, of Kadesha. And we're going to be mati, the Torah is mati, the Lav. Why? In order to be attacking the Lav Lo Signovu. Because when it comes to the moment of Acherim, we see that the Torah is more careful about having the moment of Acherim Chas V'Shalom than being boil and violating the law of Kadesha. This is the conclusion of the Chofetz Chaim in front of his yeshiva in Radin. Kama tzarich adam lizaher v'mamon chavero l'dagdek b'dover kechut ha-saira. To be very careful and not violate this Easter of having mamon chavero b'yodo. And we can talk about Noach and the Teva. Chazal say that because of the chait of Mammon, of Gneva, that's why God declared the final Gzeira to destroy the entire world.
Yeah, but what doesn't mean
nothing. Rabbi, officially, yeah, you know. I mean, oh, but maybe you want to have a Zimud now? How many people watched?
I did not watch.
You benched already. Okay, so whoever wants to continue the discussion, if not, I'll wish you all a great week.
If we would have punished him in the same onesh as Aramis, then I would have here. Okay, fine. It means that the darga of him is just like as if he did that. But instead we say, okay, now it's, since he did that, now we allow him to do another avera that is in the same darga, just to hint to him that it's the same level. It's like I don't really.
Hear. I don't know the answer to your question. I'm not being Dorish Time the Crow. I'm not trying to tell you that I can, you know, understand the mind of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. But what I am telling you is the Musa that we have to learn. In other words, the bottom line is, we can't make these shikulim and even appreciate them, but the Chafetz Chaim got up in front of his yeshiva, and this is the testimony that he said, what we have to learn about this is Chumras Averes Gneva. And again, we're not even talking about the Maisa Gneva. The Maisa Gneva was already done. We're talking about the fact that until he makes amends and he compensates for the gzela, he's holding on to Mamun Chavero.
Maybe it goes down to the Taurus Hasod. It's like the reason why an elevated Jew cannot marry Shivcha is because you cannot put these two things together. It makes a whole mess in the Rikim and all that.
Right.
You know, but now that he did. He did something so chomer. So he okay. Now he's like in the same level as she is, and like from now on, you know, like he's not going to ruin so much.
But isn't it true that in communities you have people that are known not to be the most honest people? Some of them get caught, and the scandals, they get thrown into jail. But they're part of the community. And people are afraid of them, like we discussed before. You know, sometimes you treat someone with respect because you realize that he's holding on to the, you know, to the purse strings, and he has the pressure. And yet, you know, and yet we make a big deal about someone who marries out of the faith, you know. And the Chofetz Chaim is saying that that's a warped system of how we, you know, of our system of priorities. In the communities, we accept these people, but I'll give you an example. Like Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky has a vart. Why is it that Parshas Mishpatim appears right after the Parsha of Kabbalas HaTorah?
I heard an explanation. What is the one that you're...
So Rav Yaakov wants to suggest that all of Mitzvos Bein Adam L'Chavero are connected to Mitzvos Bein Adam L'Makom. We have a tendency of thinking that there's Bein Adam L'Makom, and that's very severe. And then there's Bein Adam L'Chavero, you know, so if we speak a little Lashon Hara, I mean, they're a big deal. So what Rav Yaakov wanted to suggest was that the reason why the Torah gave us Mishpatim, which is Bein Adam L'Chavero, right up front, is to tell us that there's no way of splitting the two. You can't say half the Torah is this and the other half is that.
Start from the things that are that seem to a person more lenient, and we say, no, this is the first thing.
Correct, this is the first thing. You know, change your system of priorities. Hashem wants he with a capital H is with you everywhere. No matter, there's no, he's not only with you when you put on tefillin, you know, when everybody looks at you. If you, I don't know, do you ever have the experience of putting on tefillin in an airport, you know? You know, one of those strings, you know. But Bein Adam L'Chavero, that Hashem's not with me. You know? No, Hashem is with me, Shivisa Hashem. Wherever, every single action that I do, even if it's something that has to do with an eved or a shar or a bar or where how I protect my fields from this and that, it's all there, and Hashem is in there, all there. That's what Mishpatim wants to teach you. What did you hear?
I heard that because the memory of the Abbas was fresh in their mind, so that's what they started with, how you should treat your fellow Jew as a When he becomes a low darga, is becoming a slave. So you need to be very nice to him. You need to give him your pillow.
You remind me of Reb Chaim Shulevitz has a whole yisod about based on Yerushalmi. Yerushalmi says that even before they left Mitzrayim, they got the mitzvah, which is going to be given later on in Torah, of shichur of hanokas ha'eved. You know, it's that you have to free your eved and give him a gift. So Reb Chaim asks, why was that mitzvah given before the rest of the Torah? And he says, because that's when they were ready for it. After suffering from avdus, and they can appreciate and identify with this, with the suffering and the anguish of an eved, now you could appreciate what it means to be meshachar your eved when you have to, and to give mahanaka.
Right, and because people intend to not be nice to their slaves and to, you know, to lie to them and to do all sorts of bad things to them. So that's why also those memories are fresh in their mind, and that's why it says in the parsha, Midrash Sheker, Tirchok, and all these in Adam Lev's that they probably did not.
He has a piece here from the Bnei Saskar, also one of the great Hasidic Rebbes, and he says that one of his Hasidim was asking him, why is so many children are going off the derech and everything else? So the Rebbe got up and he said that yes, we're very makbid on kashrus, on tefillah, on bittul Torah and all this, but are we makbid on mamon chavero biyoto? He says it could very well be that the reason why we're suffering so much and the children are not being educated in the proper way and they're going off the derech is dafka because when it comes to mammon and gezel, we're very careless. And that's what's causing this terrible, terrible situation.
Interesting. Hey, Sanjay Shabbos Adorato, that has to do with Enoch also, that there's some kind of a parish that Avraham Avinu went in Habakkuk's dome, right? So it says that Hashem, I'm concerning that Avraham, Lazaro, I know.
Just Bnei Bono
Vachro. Right, so he didn't even have children by then, so how come, like, what does it have to do with Chinuch? So it's like the very basic yisod that a person needs to educate himself before he is ready to educate his kids.
Mm.
And that is the only way that really education can go through is if the father acts in the way that he tries to educate his kids.
Right.
So.
And he also has to be a dugma, you know. Children pick up on this. They realize sometimes
it's scary.
The hypocrisy, you know. It's very subtle. Let's go back a little bit to Parshas Truma, and we'll see if we have time. At least we'll get a head start in Perikov Hey Pasuk Tes Kechol Asher Ani Mar'eh Oscha Eis Tavnis Hamishkan V'Eis Tavnis Kol Kela V'Chein Ta'asu. And Rashi says V'Chein Ta'asu is Lidoros, meaning what's being formulated here by the Torah is a mitzvah like any other mitzvah for all generations. And then we have to ask ourselves the question, what is this mitzvah V'Chein Ta'asu? Meaning there are two parts to the Mishkan, to the Beis HaMikdash. There's the structure, that's called the Tavnis HaMishkan, and then there's the Kelim. There are many different Kelim in the Mishkan. They include, for example, the Shulchan, the Menorah, and the Mizbechos. So when the Torah says V'chein Ta'asu and Rashi says L'doros, what is the Torah referring to? What mitzvah is it? Says Rashi, Im ya'aved echad min ha-kelim, if any of the kelim are lost, and that would apply even during the time of the Mishkan, okshetasu kli beis olamim, or when the Beis HaMikdash at the time of Shlomo HaMelech would be built, then it all has to follow the tavnis that Hashem gave here in Parshas Truma. Rashi gives examples: Kagon, Shulchanos, Menoros, Kioros, Mechonos, Shasa Shlomo. Anything that was made by Shlomo, all these kelim for the Mikdash, would have to be exact duplicates of the kelim and their sizes, their tzura, all the measurements, etc., that were given here in the Mishkan. Kitavnis elu tasu osam. So Rashi's learning that the mitzvah v'chein tasu relates not just to Tavnis HaMishkan, but also to Tavnis Kol Kelov. And if you look in the Ramban rejects Rashi. He says, Lo yadati shi'ez ze'emes. She's chayiv Shlomo lasas klei beis olamim kitavnis elu. Is it really true? Asks the Ramban as a tmiya on Rashi that when Shlomo Melech creates the kelim for the mikdash, he's got to duplicate what was given here in the Torah in Parshas Truma. He says umizbech nechoshes asa Shlomo esrim ama orach v'esrim rochav. In fact, the measurements, he says, of the Mizbach HaNechoshes were not identical with those measurements of the Mizbeach in the Mishkan. And the Orchaim HaKodesh tries to defend Rashi from this Ramban's question based on a Gemara in Zvachim, and he comes back and asks Akasha on the Ramban. He says, I have an explicit Gemara that supports Rashi. And this is Kash on the Ramban. The Gemara says in Masechet Shavuos, in the Sugya of Migdash, it says over there, V'chein Tasu L'doros. The Gemara says, Masiv Rava, Kol HaKelim Shasan Moshe, Mishichasan Mekadshasan. Rava says that in the case of the Kelim that Moshe created for the Mishkan, the Kiddush process was through Mashicha B'Shemen HaMishcha. Mikan V'Elech, the Gemara says, in other words, in other Batei Mikdashos, Avodasan Mechanchasan, that the Chinuch and the Kiddush is through the Avod itself. V'Amai V'Nema V'Chein Tasu L'Doros. The Gemara darshens that this pasuk V'Chein Tasu L'Doros, V'Chein Tasu, which is interpreted L'Doros, is related to Klei HaMikdash. It's not just related to the Tavnis HaMishkan. And therefore, the Kelim are included explicitly by the Gemara under the Pasuk V'chein Tasu. And we're going to have to say, according to the Ramban, that V'chein Tasu only relates to that which is explicit in the Torah, not to the Tavnis HaKelim. The Torah doesn't go into great detail about the Tavnis of the Kelim. And truth be told, if you look in Tosfos, in Masechet Sanhedrin, Tosfos says, Ein mosifin al ha'ir v'al ha'zoros, el al pi bezdin shal ayin aleph. We need the highest bezdin in the land to expand the city of Yerushalayim and the Azara. The Gemara derives it from the Pasuk, V'chein Tasu. And if you look at Rashi there in Sanhedrin, V'chein Tasu l'doros, ma mishkan al pi Moshe. It means that the Mishkan itself was supervised and erected by Moshe Rabbeinu, who bimkom Sanhedrin Gdola, and Moshe himself was shokel. He was a representative, and he had the authority of the Sanhedrin Gdola, the largest court in the land, the Supreme Court. Afli Doros Alpi Sanhedrin Gdola. So too for all generations, we need someone to replace Moshe Rabbeinu and supervise the fulfillment of the mitzvah V'chein Tasu L'Doros, and that's going to be the Sanhedrin HaGedola. So Tosfos there in Sanhedrin on Daf Tezayin Amid Beis raises the Kashmim Tome V'Kelim Namini Boi Shivim V'Echad. Tosfos certainly postulates that the creation of Kelim would also require the supervision of the Sanhedrin HaGedola. In other words, under this pasuk V'chein Tasu. V'chitema hakosuv tolo b'sherus di'ein tzorach ela sherus ha'mashu v'sorti lav osam hava mina deboi meshicha ve'avoda v'imkein hashtu d'chsiv osam l'me'ute meshicha but ayin aleph mi'olo nimait v'yeshlomar di'osa osam l'gluye d'v'chein tasu lo koi akelim. Here is an explicit Tosfos that supports the Ramban, that V'chein Tasu does not relate to the Kelim. And we don't require duplicating that which Moshe did, namely to replace the supervision with that of the Sanhedrin HaGedola. So therefore Tosfos' opinion is that although you will require the Sanhedrin HaGedola to oversee and supervise the process of building the Mikdash, But nevertheless, leaving out the Tavnis on Mishkan, if you go down to the level of Kalim, there's no mitzvah of Achein Tasu that would engender a chiyuv that Bezna Gadol, the Sanhedrin Agdola, be there to supervise the creation of the Kalim. And this would certainly support the Ramban against Rashi. Because Rashi understands that the V'chein Tasu, which is the mitzvah that requires Moshe and the Sanhedrin Agdola as a replacement of Moshe, or the other way around, the Sanhedrin Agdola and Moshe as a replacement thereof, that mitzvah applies to the Migdash itself, but not to the Klei HaMigdash. That's explicit here. And the question is, you know, if Rashi disagrees and Rashi extends V'chein Tasu to include the Klei HaMigdash, what's he going to do with the Kashiv Tosfos? That Tosfos is saying that if V'chein Tasu applies to the Kalim as it does to the Tavnis, the structure of the Migdash, then you should require Sanhedrin Agdola, the 71 elders. We don't find that with regard to the Kalim we require Sanhedrin Agdola. So we're going to have to say that Tola HaKosav B'Sheiris and Lo Shaychi B'Zeh Bezdin. Okay, so that's a principle, Tola Kosuv Besherus, which means that the Kiddush process is complete through the Avod itself. That's a sugya unto itself, not for us now. But be that as it may, according to Rashi, since the Kalim come under the law of Avod and Sherus, therefore it's the authority in the domain of the Kohanim and not Bezdin. Now Rashi holds V'chein Tasu, which means Ludoros, is referring to the Kalim. It could very well be that the Rambam himself would agree with Rashi. The Rambam at the beginning of Hilchas Beis HaBechira, Perek Aleph Halacha Vav, says that the Aron, as well as the Shulchan and the Menorah, are all included under the Mitzaseh of the Asuli Migdash. And the Rambam, it sort of incurs the wrath of the Ramban. If you look in the Mishnah Lemelech, he quotes the Ramban in Sefer HaMitzvos, and the Ramban disagrees with the Rambam. And he holds that Aron, Shulchan, and Menorah, which come under the Keli HaMikdash, they are only a Hechsher Avoda. And therefore, the Asiya of something, which is a Hechsher Avoda, is not included under this mitzvah of the Asuli Migdash. And the Ramban says, V'chein lo nimna anachnu, we will not count or enumerate Asiyas HaShulchan Mizbeach Menorah B'mitzvah, V'nation it's tavinu losum lechem lifnei Hashem tomit. In other words, you have to create the Shulchan, but only as a hechsher for the avoda of putting the lechem upon him on the Shulchan. And therefore, the mitzvah of the avoda, exclusive of the Hechsher Avoda, is to put the Lechem on the Shulchan, but the creation of the Shulchan itself is not a mitzvah per se. So he says, Tziva osonu behechsher avoda zos shi losum oson oso b'shulchan. Mitur came ksader olav b'nyin zed. Tzivon yisbarach hadlokas ner lefonov v'seder lanu v'sid lanu shetia hadloka zu b'menoras zov mishkala v'nyano kach v'kach. Hine hem tashmishei kedusha v'lo huchshar v'yene hatav shekos bar rav shom shem chelik michelki ha-migdosh. He says that the creation of the Kalim is not part of the mitzvah of building the Migdosh. The Kalim are only serving as Hechsher, you know, to set up, whether it be you create the menorah to set up the hadlaka, create the shulchan to set up the lechem aponim, but Hechsher avoda is not avoda per se. And even though we have a command to create these kalim, but that doesn't come under the mitzvah of creating the migdash luchud, and creating the kalim as a Hechsher avoda luchud. And therefore, the Ramban rejects the Rambam's view that would subsume the creation of the Aron, the Shulchan, the Menorah as part of the general mitzvah of the Asuli Migdash, of creating the Migdash. The Ramban, from his perspective, thinks that only that which is a part and parcel of the Bayis, that itself is included in the mitzvah of creating the Bayis, but not creating the Kalim. Creating the Kalim is a separate mitzvah, a separate tzivui, and in fact you could be makriv in a Beis HaMikdash, if you have the structure of the Beis HaMikdash, even without Kelim. The Kelim are not Ma'akev. You see, the Kelim doesn't come under that same identical mitzvah as creating the Mikdash. Because the Ramban in V'chein Tzivu, excuse me, in the Tzivu of V'chein Tasu, in which the Ramban insists that this V'chein Tasu is not a reference, it does not include the Kelim, he is very consistent because the Kelim are not part of the Asiyas HaMikdash. You know, if the Kelim were part and parcel of the building of the Mikdash the way the Rambam has it, then of course the V'chein Tasu would probably include the Kelim as well. But since according to Ramban, V'chein Tasu doesn't apply, it doesn't include the Kelim, because the Kelim is not part of the creation of the Mikdash, therefore V'chein Tasu, according to Ramban, is a reference to the Tavnis HaMishkan, but not to the Tavnis of the Keli HaMishkan. But the Rambam himself would seem, therefore, to be in the camp of Rashi, and the V'chein Tasu includes not just the Tavnis HaMishkan, the structure of the Mishkan, but also includes the Kelim. And therefore, says the Rambam, it makes sense to assume that the creation of those Kelim is part and parcel of the creation of the Mikdash. They are essential to the Mikdash. The V'chein Tasu is a reference to the Kelim as well. That's something that that's very, very interesting. Now, in the context of this machlokas between Rashi and the Rabban, where the V'chein Tasu applies to Kelim as well, the Ramban, of course, says that the Tavnis HaKelim is not included under V'chein Tasu. This could possibly shed a light on the on another issue that's very related to this one about the Mizbechos. There were two Mizbechos, the Mizbech HaOlah and the Mizbech HaZov. And Rashi, when he counts in V'chein Tasu, the Kelim of the Mikdash that are included in that mitzvah, he writes Shulchanos, Menoros, Kioros, Umachonos, and he never mentions a word about Mizbechos. In other words, with regard to Mizbeach, what would Rashi say? Is there any reason why Mizbeach is less of a clay Mikdash than the other Kelim of Menoros, Shulchan, etc., etc., that are part and parcel of the mitzvah of creating the Mikdash? And perhaps we have to talk about the Mizbeach HaZov, that Rashi holds the Mizbeach HaZov is not part of the Tavnis HaMikdash and the Mitzvah of V'chein Tasu, but only Klei Shoreis, which are designated for Avoda and for Karbonos. Those are the Kelim that are part of the Mitzvah of creating the Mikdash and the Pasuk of V'chein Tasu. So for example, the Mizbeach HaZov, which is given in Parshas Truma, should not be included in the mitzvah the same way Shulchan and Menorah would be included. And this might also add a little bit of explanation to the question of the Shemen Lama'or, which is included in Meleches HaMishkan. And the question is, what status does the Shemen HaMor have? It's a little bit perplexing to subsume and categorize Shemen LaMor as part of the Tavnis HaMishkan. It's certainly not structural. Again, you might ask me, what about Besamim, which were used to make the Shemen HaMishcha? Why would that be part of the Meleches HaMishkan? And the answer probably is because insofar as Rashi sees the Kelim as part of the Asu, the V'chein Tasu, the mitzvah of creating the Mikdash, and the Kelim would only be sanctified through the Shemen LaMa'or. So in that sense, then maybe we would say that let's go back again. I was confusing the Shemen HaMishcha and the Shemen HaMor. The Shemen HaMishcha is part of the Avoda of Hadlokas HaMenorah, whereas the Shemen that's as far as the Shemen LaMor is. The Shemen HaMishcha, on the other hand, is essential to the Melechas HaMishkan because we're going to use the Shemen HaMishcha for Meshicha of all the Kelim. So if the mitzvah of Kelim is part of this mitzvah of Achein Tasu, then ipso facto the mitzvah of creating the Shemen LaMa'or for the purpose, I'm sorry, the Shemen HaMishcha, again I made the same mistake, the Shemen HaMishcha is also part of the mitzvah of Melechas HaMishkan to create Kelim Mekudashim Bamikdash, Bamishkan. But in the case of Shemen LaMa'or, as opposed to Shemen HaMishcha, which is not part of creating the Kelim, but rather is part of the mitzvah of Hadlokas Ner, there we would say that the Ketores itself, the creation of the Ketores, is certainly not a Melechas HaMishkan. It's like any Avodas HaKarbon. Anything that's necessary for Karbonos. But it certainly is not part of the mitzvah of creating the Mikdash. In other words, we're going to use the Shemen LaMa'or for the lighting of the menorah to guarantee that the Tavnis HaMishkan has a menorah deluka, but the actual creation of the Shemen LaMa'or, that process for the purpose of lighting the menorah, that itself is not included in Melechas HaMishkan. And for example, the Haktoras itself. What's the status of the Haktoras? Because we're saying that the creation of the Shemen HaMishkan is part of the creation of the Kelim. We're saying that the Shemen LaMa'or will be part of the menorah, but it doesn't form an integral part in the mitzvah of creating the Mikdash, Melechas HaMikdash. And if this be the case, then the Ketores is not a Melechas HaMishkan. So that creating the Ketores, and this definition of Ketores would really shed a light on Rashi's omission of the Mizbach HaZov from the mitzvah of Melechas HaMishkan. Rashi gives various categories, but he leaves out the Mizbach HaZov. The answer is that all the other Kelim were part of the Avoda, or the structure of the Mishkan. In the case of the Shemen HaMishcha, the Shemen HaMishcha was likely part of the creation of the Kelim, but in the case of the Shemen of the Besamim and the creation of the Ketores, that's a whole different story. That's not a Melechas HaMishkan because it's not part of an Avoda. So what we did on the Mizbach HaZov is not called Tavnis HaMishkan because there was no Avoda on the Mizbach HaZov. Saktores would not be Melechas HaMishkan. Okay, Rabos, I mean, we touched on some of this topic, and although there's a lot more here, but we'll have to take a break now. I just want to point out, as we conclude, that there's an interesting nafkamina to our whole discussion, which might help clarify it, about Tiltul Mizbach HaZov, the Raivin in Hilchus Kelim, says that there's an Isur to be Metaltil Shulchan u'Menorah. He doesn't mention the Mizbach HaZov. L'chore, the whole reason for this Isur of moving the Shulchan u'Menorah from its place, uprooting it, is because of the kiyum of Seder Tavnas HaMishkan. When you change the place, you'll be mevatel the Tavnas HaMishkan. You violate the essay that the Torah said, v'chein tasu, of creating the Tavnas HaMishkan. And according to Rashi, it's very good because the Shulchan and the Menorah, as insofar as they are kelim, are part of the Tavnas HaMishkan and the kiyum of v'chein tasu. And by moving it from place to place, you're violating that mitzvah. Now, the Rambam seems to assume that with regard to the Mizbach HaKtores, there is a tzivi of Yosuli Migdash, and therefore it would indicate that the Mizbach HaKtores, or otherwise known as Mizbach HaZov, would be subject to the same Isur Tiltul. But if, on the other hand, you take the Mizbach HaZov, as we said before, or the Mizbach HaKtores, as we call it, out of the context of the mitzvah of Asiyas Tavnas HaMishkan, then we can understand why, according to the Ravid at least, there's no Issa Tiltul in the Mizbech HaZov. According to the Ramban, on the other hand, all of Klei Migdash, including the Mizbech HaZov, are excluded from Asiyas, from the Mitzvah of Asiyas Migdash. And therefore, none of the Kalim should be subject to the Issa Tiltul. So that's something that we want to take under advisement. What would be the status of moving the Klei HaMikdash, moving the Mizbeach, the Mizbechos, especially the Mizbech HaZov, which we said was not part of the Avoda, not part of the Tavnes HaMishkan, would there be an Isur in moving it because we're uprooting that essay of V'chein Tas? And that should be taken advisement based on everything that we discussed today with regard to Rashi, the Ramban, and to look carefully at the Ravid in Hilchas Kalim, the first Ravid in the third Perek, Perek Gimel, of Hilchas Kalim. Rashi would disagree with the Rambam as far as Mizbech HaZov. Is Mizbech HaZov included together with all the Klei HaMikdash in the mitzvah of creating the Mikdash? The Rambam says yes. The mitzvah of Vayasali Mikdash includes also the Mizbech HaZov. Rashi might disagree. And we spoke before about the fact that the Mizbech HaZov is different. If that be the case, then according to Rashi, you could be metalta the Mizbech HaZov, and it's very meduyok that Mizbech HaZov was not listed here, enumerated under those kalim that are part of the Issur Tiltul. Okay, we'll stop here.